This podcast is a Uniting Heart and Soul production. Hello and welcome back to Filthy Hope, a podcast from Uniting Heart and Soul in Wallara, where we dive into the grey spaces where Jesus, life and culture intersect. I'm your host, Jonty Cornford, Creative Director here at Uniting Heart and Soul, and joining me, of course, is the Reverend Vanessa Williams-Henke, Senior Pastor here at Uniting Heart and Soul. This week we're continuing our look into topics of intimacy and sexuality, and we are joined by a very special guest, James Aaron. I'll let James introduce himself properly on the podcast, but his experiences in the church, both as a churchgoer and as a minister of the word, bring real life, depth and practicality to our discussion a few weeks ago about queer theology. As usual, there'll be some swearing in the podcast, so if that isn't your jam, then this podcast may not be for you. Enjoy the episode, and I'll see you on the other side. Welcome to the podcast. James, how are you?
I'm well, thank you.
How are you? So happy to have you on.
I'm excited.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Just before we dive into Vent Central, Ness is up for Vent Central. Do you want to just quickly introduce yourself, who you are, what you do for our audience?
Who am I? So I'm James. I'm a minister in the Uniting Church. I've been a minister for about 4 years. What do I do? Lots of things, birth, death, life, all the bits in between. I'm particularly excited at the moment about shifting gears and moving in more into uniting services, so working with Wayside in the near future and trying to eliminate loneliness in Sydney and Australia indeed. Yeah.
Amazing.
It's pretty exciting.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
We're going to dive into your story and hear more from you in a sec. But of course, first we have to stop by Vent Central.
Bum, bum, bum.
Ness, what's given you the shits?
Oh, look, hilarious. It's life-giving and shit-giving all in the same time, okay? So I was invited to be a part of a conference just recently. I was so excited. I thought, oh my gosh, they want to know about what's happening in church and what we're doing and the expressions of church that we're doing that are interesting and new and fresh, inverted commas. And so I put hours into prepping this thing and I was so excited. And I was told that I had 8 fucking minutes. 8 minutes. I can't do any conversation just for 8 minutes. It's like a nightmare. And I thought, how on earth am I going to synthesise all this information down into 8 minutes? And the convener was really specific that this was the amount of time that I had, so I needed to fulfil my obligation. And I got there and I thought, I still didn't know quite how I was going to do it. And I was on a panel with great speakers and I was up first and I really just wanted 45 minutes.
Yeah.
And they shut me down. They had to though and I was just so gutted.
How long did it take you to get to the conference, can I ask?
Yeah, it took me 1 hour and 20 to drive there and 1 hour and 20 to get back and I did 8 minutes. Yeah.
Did you kill that 8 minutes though?
Yeah,
of course. Fucking good 8 minutes.
Good. Yeah. Good 8 minutes.
There's a story I heard recently. I believe it was the comedian Ryan Sickler telling a story about Dave Chappelle. This is back just after the Chappelle show stopped. And he was just wandering around doing stand-up in comedy clubs. And Chappelle turned up. I don't remember who the headliner was. And I'll link the video in the episode so you can watch this story told much better than I can. But he turns up at this show that already has a headlining act booked in
to perform for however long, and asks, can I jump on the bill? And the promoter says, yes, of course you can, you're Dave Chappelle. 45 minutes though, keep it tight, because it's, insert comedian's name here, it's his night. And he's saying, most comedians, especially someone of his calibre at that time, would have been like, fuck that, I'm not doing eight minutes. I'm not doing 45 minutes, I'm going to go for an hour and a half. Chappelle gets up, does 45, finishes, and then stops and thinks, and then says, you know what, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to do something I have never done before. I'm going to go out into the car park and smoke some cigarettes. You're all more than welcome to come and hang out and just chat shit and hang out. So the entire audience stood up and left.
Whoa.
And went and hung out with Dave Chappelle. And this performer just performed to nobody. Like, there's your 45 minutes, bitch.
Can I just... I just want to clarify. I don't think I'm special or better than anybody else, but I just really wanted more time because I wanted to talk about the great things that Jesus is doing in and through our ministry. And I was super excited about that. And I... We'll just make an opportunity where we can do that, won't we, Jonty?
Yeah.
And those things are already in the breeze, as we say.
That's it.
Yep.
Yeah. I just think asking someone to do something for 8 minutes with what, almost 3 hours travel time for it? In terms of a ratio of like effort to outcome. It's a bit ridiculous.
Should have zoomed in.
But I love the church.
Yeah, we do.
We do. The things we do, right.
Yeah.
We do crazy shit in the name of Jesus sometimes, don't we?
And was it a good conference?
Yeah, I think it was. Yeah. Certainly the calibre of the people on the panel, I learned a lot, actually. It was really, I'm really glad I was a part of it, even though it was only 8 minutes. Have I said that enough? Yeah. No, they were a powerhouse group of speakers, and I was privileged to be a part of that team. Mm. Yeah, definitely. I just wanted another 40.
Yeah, it's more about the time management.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. You've made me feel annoyed again just hearing that story. So that's what Van Central is all about, baby.
Do we need to put the music on now? So I'll give you a minute.
Yeah. I'll throw some Van Central music in.
Okay.
Yeah,
cue the music now.
Yeah.
For joining us today. It's a real privilege to have you here, and I feel privileged to know sections of your story. We went through Rev College together, seminary together, and the highs and lows of what that looked like, and I'm really excited for you to be here today and to share with us a bit about your story.
Thank you. I've been nodding emphatically all the way through that, just for those who are listening and not seeing that. But yeah, I'm so excited to be here, Ness and Jonty. I've been listening to you for the last few months and catching up on the podcast and just getting a bit excited about what you are doing here and the realness about how you're expressing Christ in the real, the nitty-gritty, the shit and the fuck and the everything in between. It's pretty cool.
Just got to keep it honest, mate, don't we? That's how we roll.
I can swear, can't I?
Of course.
Good. Triple check. I've heard people swearing.
We give a warning.
Yeah. Okay.
Definitely a warning.
PG.
And
we did have someone message us on Facebook and say, I don't know why you feel the need to swear. Like, why do you swear so much? And I said, which episode are you worried about? I've listened to all of them.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. There's a lot of swearing.
But I'm not listening to any more.
Yeah.
Like, okay, but you listened to all, I think it was 9 at that point. You didn't have an issue for those ones. But now you've reached the point at which there are no more episodes, you're done.
Okay, cool.
And if for me to be authentic, and this is all about authenticity in the church, then occasionally words will come out of my mouth that may offend people, but we make it really clear. You don't have to tune in.
No.
You don't have to listen.
No.
Pop on Joyce Meyer or Kenneth Copeland or somebody else.
Yeah.
You know, Bobby Houston. You can pop them on, mate. And you won't hear one naughty word ever.
That's right.
Do you know what I mean? But that's not life.
We're not polishing anything,
That's right. No. Yeah. Anyway, we'll do it. We're going to do a series on language anyway, aren't we, Jonty?
We're going to address it.
Unpack the fuck out of that.
Yeah. I think I said previously, because I sometimes do shout-outs at the end for people that have messaged. I mentioned this guy by first name. Said, it's a shame you're not going to be listening anymore, but you should definitely check in on our episode where we talk about swearing and how we talk about that as Christians, because it's going to be real fucking good.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. Anyway, James, I was wondering, could you tell us a little bit about your story and how on earth did you come from being a solicitor and a musician to hearing the call of God on your life to then have you leave that world behind and to enter into religious studies and a Bachelor of Theology and then to pursue this kingdom call?
Yeah, so it starts a long time ago. I was in and out of church as a young person, so I was... I guess my faith journey was that where I had seeds of faith from a very early age in Catholic and Methodist churches. And it sort of, they grew over time. And so I kind of met God or creator in that space. And then when I was a young person, I was experiencing trauma through like childhood sexual assault and through like parents who did the best they could with all they knew how, but it wasn't a lot. And so I met Christ through the church again, through a particular minister or a youth minister who really reached out and picked me up for Easter and picked me up for Christmas and really engaged with me as a human being, and probably was the only person in my very micro world at that stage who actually treated me like a human being. And so him meeting me at the well, or him meeting me at the point of trauma in my life, created a threshold in me that I didn't know existed. So I suddenly became a real person and started to live into myself. I left the church then for a little while because I didn't know I could be... I started to realise that I was gay, and I started to realise that I was different and all of that, and I didn't know where that fit in the church, and there was no language in the church around that, particularly... At that time, everybody who was coupled was male and female, and nobody spoke about anything in between. Moving through, I kept getting called back to church, and I say called back to church, but what would happen is that I would, I'd really miss the music, or yeah. I'd really miss something about gathering and worshipping. I'd really miss praying with people. I'd really need the connection. And so I would come back to church and eventually ended up in a Pentecostal congregation, personally doing really well. Like personally going to university, working full-time in contracts, and so I was working in corporate and just balancing my world really, really well and thriving authentically. Moved in with a partner at the time and we had a pretty good relationship, but as soon as the Pentecostal church worked out that I had moved in with a man, I was excluded. So I was sent a letter to say, don't come to church on Sunday, we'll meet you on Wednesday. So my Wednesday night music group, my Friday night Bible study group, my young adults fellowship on Saturday, and my 6 hours of leading worship and doing the Pentecostal church thing, suddenly all of my network, like my outside of work network, just was completely obliterated, and no one could contact me, no one was allowed to, and all of that. So I left the church again, obviously.
Aren't they lovely Christians?
It was so beautiful.
Oh,
but awesome. It was the loving thing to do, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah. I wonder what Jesus would say about that.
You know? Pretty angry, I reckon.
Pissed off.
There'll be some thrown tables.
It
was really traumatic, like, because it was kind of like I was still integrating who I was as a young-ish person into my work self. And so I really threw myself into my workness. And I became my identity in work. And so I earned a lot of money. You know, my partner at the time, we purchased a property and purchased another property and started to live into that realm. And I started traveling for work and so on. Eventually, God called me onto the balcony of life. So literally the balcony in my house at 4 a.m. every single day, sitting down with a Bible.
Whoa.
And my partner was really against the church because he'd seen them exclude me.
Yeah.
And so I hid the Bible underneath the planter box on our balcony. And 4 o'clock every single day, I would get up and start reading from the Bible. And literally read it from beginning to end, probably 3 times over the course of 4 years. And then would slip back into bed at 5:30 and pretend like I was just waking up with the alarm. But every single day, they tap on the shoulder, like, it's time to get up and read. And,
oh, wow, James.
And I think my formation for ministry really started then.
Yeah.
In that every single day, gathering around the word and being gathered with. And I felt like it's probably not good to use an image of a grandfather God, but I had this image of this old cloaked grandfather God coming and sitting with me and sharing the wisdom of the scripture and really building me up. And it's quite a Pentecostal image, actually. But sitting in that, I started to meet the Spirit. And so I'd been introduced to God at a young age, the Creator, and then throughout my teenage years, I'd been introduced to Christ through this person. And then in that age, I started to be introduced to the Spirit, who would visit and share the wisdom of the Trinity with me.
Wow.
In solitude, though. And so I was slowly being built up in these stories of faith and slowly being built up there. And eventually that voice got louder and louder and louder. And my partner and I split because we were just fundamentally different. And I was really, like, anxious, depressed, upset. And I had a really good friend who, like a drug addict, completely, like, mentally unwell themselves. And they hated the church. They really hated the church. But they said, oh, there's this gay church you need to go and visit. And I was like, a gay church? Like, nah, it's not going to happen, right? And I walked into this gay church with this person who hates the church.
So
it took a non-Christian hater of the church to take me back to church.
God's clever, like that, right?
Yes, she is. So we walked through the doors, and the music, the song that is playing, is the very last song that I'd heard in a church at a funeral.
Oh, wow.
It was like Your Unfailing Love, which is this old soppy Hillsong number. But walk in. And I literally, like, metaphorically, I should say, fell to my knees, but I just had to sit down because I was like, part of me was like, fuck you, God. Like, how dare you, you emotionally manipulative sausage. but a huge part of me was like, oh, I'm home.
Yeah.
I'm home in the music. I'm home in the God. I'm home in all of this. And then I look up and I see Tash Holmes is leading.
Wow.
And so, like, this weird connection from ages and ages ago in my life suddenly appearing again. And so I started to be integrated back into church and to find myself in church and okay to be in church. And so I always knew that I was fine before God. Like, yeah. God and I met and we were fine. Like, we were buddy old pals and... they were caring, he was aware, like it was very present, and there was nothing ever wrong with me personally. And so the gay and the Christian thing was never an integration issue for me. The church, it was a different story, and it took a little while for me to find my right corner in the church to be my authentic self. And so sometimes... when I look back at that story, I go, oh, I need to create more spaces or more pockets in the church where people like me can look at the church and go, oh, there is a space for me. And so that story started to overtake my life, and I realized I just needed to be a good Christian and really human and really present. And eventually that led me to, there's a verse in Luke that talks about Christ coming and the mountains being humbled and the valleys being filled. And I realized that is our call in this generation, is to make the pathway straight for the next generation and to try and create a space for people to be safe in the church, whether they LGBTIQ+ or part of a different rainbow spectrum that we haven't thought of yet, or just different in some way, shape or form that we haven't even encountered yet. And so just being aware that that Christ is the right word for me. But as soon as I create that word for someone else, it creates a barrier between them and God. And so I have to let God do the speaking, and I just have to be present to them. And that eventually led me to ministry. There's one more Bible verse. I know I speak about the Bible too much. No. So I was like...
you don't want to scare off the listeners,
James. I know, right? but all the way back in Ezekiel, there's this story about... Ezekiel being called out to the valley of dry bones, and he stands over and he's looking into the valley, and God, Spirit, says, speak life over these bones that they may live, and then God does the breathing. And so then there's the click and clack and the rattle and so on and so forth. But all Ezekiel does is speak life. And so my call into ministry was about speaking life in order to fill the valleys and humble the mountains. And that's no small call, but it is an easy call.
That's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. It's a very powerful story. I was wondering, James, in the Uniting Church, what is it like being a gay person, actually just in the church in general? I want to know the good, the bad, the ugly, and the dumb shit people say.
Yeah.
Don't you reckon?
Yeah. Because people there's say a lot of dumb shit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, we'll start with dumb shit and then we'll go into some of the more details. It's so funny because I think as a gay man, a lot of people think about me having sex a lot more than I think about having sex. Mm-hmm. So whenever it comes to a conversation about just being gay and in the church, instantly someone is talking about bum fun. And I'm like, I'm not that exciting, people. And so, like, a lot of the conversations that I, a lot of the stupid conversations that I have are about sex.
Wow.
Like, essentially, from the get-go. So, like, I walk into a room and say I'm gay, and instantly, I don't know, for some reason, people associate straight away to the sex. Whereas when someone tells me that they're straight, I don't want to think about their bedtime fun.
No,
like,
that's
that is not my jam. Yet, a lot of the conversations we have about safe sex and about sexual awareness and all this different stuff, which are really important conversations to have, but maybe not, hi, I'm James and I like bum sex. Like, not my jam.
And people never ask me about P&V.
Yeah, no.
Ever.
No.
They never ask me how it went with Rob the other night.
Yeah, no.
I, you know, that's just not a thing.
No. And for some reason, anyway. And then they instantly assume, and some of the most lovely people assume that I'm going to find them attractive. And, you know, they're very lovely people, but...
Because you're a man?
Yeah, and because they're a man and they think, you know... Oh.
Right.
So they'll instantly say... So you say that you're having a conversation and they're like, yeah, but I'm not gay. And I'm like, you don't need to tell me that. Like, I know. Yeah. Like, it's
like,
okay.
Does that guy say the same... straight guys talking to women.
Yeah.
They don't have to qualify every conversation with, you know, I'm not attracted to you, right?
Like, yeah, no.
Like, it's never a thing in straight settings. Like,
yeah.
And I think I mentioned this a couple of weeks ago, but, like, this idea that churches, you don't talk about sex ever. Mm. Ever, ever, ever. But then as soon as there's some form of sexual expression that's different, it's, like, fixated upon to this absurd degree. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
And you hear these, like, incredible preachers suddenly talking about penis and bums, and you're like, you've got other content. Yeah. Like, let's use that. So that's the stupid thing. I love it because it's a lot of fun, and I love shifting... I love shifting ground. Like, I love that kind of space.
And you don't get perturbed by it, do you?
Not at all.
You know exactly how to roll with it.
Yeah, yeah. And it's never about me, right? Yeah. Like, it's never actually about me. But the Uniting Church has lots of incredible spaces where there can, like, be real, genuine expressions, hi, these couches, real, genuine expressions of who we are. And so... we celebrate pride and diversity, and we celebrate multiculturalism, and we celebrate a whole bunch of expressions about who we are, because we understand it at the very core, at the trunk of the tree of the church, is this God who calls us into community with each other. And and that's love and dove and all of that in between. And hopefully that's the sign of peace for the world, that people can see that there's a space for diversity to flourish and grow. And the Uniting Church really does, I think, at its best, in its most best form, can sit with the right and the left, the extreme and the non-extreme, and can sit in the middle somewhere and find a common voice for spirit to dwell. And so I can be sitting in a room making decisions about fundamental care practices and about faith and theology and all of that with someone who's fundamentally against a big part of who I am as a person, and we can agree to serve with one another. And that's my call, again, into ministry, like sitting in ordained ministry in the Uniting Church. We're called to serve the whole church, and so sometimes that whole church doesn't see me as a human. That's not okay, but there's still a space for me in the Uniting Church to do that work. And so that's it's at its best. At its worst, you know, we have moments where different voices speak much louder, and they have been able to speak for so much longer. And so there's this kind of privilege. And we talk about privilege being like a big cake or a big pie at times. And you know, there's enough for the people who are served already, but we forget that God has an abundance. And so, like, there was enough manna that fell from heaven. There's enough privilege for everyone. Yeah. And so if we take what we need, not always what we want, then there's space for all of us to be at the same table. So I usually don't dwell in it too hard, but there's moments where I realise that the tables and the systems and the processes that we've set up actually need to be completely shut down and recreated with each other, because our systems and processes are still run, the heavy influence on them is still straight white, middle-class, educated men, because of the systems and processes and democratizing and all of that stuff that we've set up have been set up by those people. Mm. Sometimes we need to just smash the table and just say, okay, let's do this again with each other.
Yeah.
Who's in the room and so on. And so often I find myself looking around the room and going, oh, shit, I'm the only queer voice.
Yeah.
Crap. Like, and again, the stupid question, what do gay people think? You know what? I don't know. I can tell you what James thinks. And that's, and you probably get that as a woman in practice, and you probably get that as a layperson in the church as well. Is that a good answer?
Yeah, it's really fantastic. Yeah. And I think for our listeners that don't understand how the Uniting Church works, we have this huge diversity, but we are unified in our diversity. So we've at one end, we've got quite extreme evangelical right-wing Christian views, and right down the other end of the spectrum, we have very progressive views. And in the middle, that's what you're talking about, somehow we can come together as a church and the Spirit does the Spirit's gig and we can still function.
Yeah.
Can't we?
Yeah, and we do.
It's quite extraordinary, actually.
Yeah.
Because I don't know if there's any other Protestant faiths that actually function like us. Are there?
Well, it's a credit to the Uniting Church that you can travel along the North Shore train line and hop off at any point and jump into any one of those churches, and the theology is so varied in all of them.
Exactly.
Which is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's part absolutely. Of where that comes from, I think, is it's in its construction is welcoming of all different perspectives. And obviously that varies church to church. If we're talking about queer spaces, there are countless horror stories of that not going down well in specific church settings. But the Uniting Church, I think we talked about this a few weeks ago, basically empowered congregation to congregation to make the decision that is right for that congregation.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is incredibly rare in church spaces. It's usually, here it is. Mm. You don't divert from here's the wisdom that we all abide by.
This is our theology.
Exactly.
This is our theology, and this is what we stand by.
Yeah.
And there's no grey area here.
That's
this is
right.
what you will think.
Yeah,
yeah.
So James, what about you touched on that then, Jonty, about the ugly spaces?
Yeah.
Because I know you're sort of going around the edge there.
Mm.
I do know in your story there has been some. Not so happy moments in church land as an ordained man in the church.
Yeah.
Are you able to share some of that and why you think that came to pass?
So, like, I think there's a twofold thing. There's the confrontation that's directly in your face. So there's people who openly, completely disagree with you or, like, are violently opposed to you being an ordained minister. So, like, being as public as I have been, and out as I have been, like, there's been no point where I've not been out. I don't walk into a room and say I'm gay, but my kind of mouth when the handbag falls out kind of creates the scene for people. They don't have to look too far and dress like I am. But yeah, so there's moments that...
You've got more muscle and bigger quads than most white guys I know, mate.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And I do enough MMA that I could exactly. A little bit of fun.
Sort those bastards right out.
Yeah, in Jesus' name.
Yeah. Amen.
Yeah, preach. So I like there's confrontation that's like head in your face. Like I've deleted my Facebook, for example, because I was receiving so many like hateful, like hurtful messages that I was starting to internalize them. Mm. And they came from people in the church and outside of the church and like people from like not even in Australia, like well done, good and faithful servants. So they were doing their bit for the kingdom and their bit was really painful. And so for me, working in ordained ministry, starting to internalize some of those voices and question my space in the church was really difficult. And even throughout formation, just being like obviously being the first in situations was really difficult. So coming through formation and questioning some of the presuppositions, like actually that doesn't work for me. Actually that doesn't work for me. And you find these little fundamental flaws in moments where you're like, actually, like that's never going to work for me because I might not ever have children, or I might not have this, or I might not have that. And all of these different things, like it's confronting all the time. But then there's the little mosquitoes, I call them. So you walk into a room and you're wondering, are these people disrespecting or not holding space or not listening to what I'm saying because I'm gay, or is it because something I've done or something like that? And so you've got all of those things. And I think we all experience that in a certain way. I think women in the church experience that, especially women, ordained women experience that, or people of colour and people of different minorities, they all always experience this kind of back-end conversation in the back of their head, like, is this the mosquito or is this me projecting onto it? Mm. And something happens to us when that happens, and I think it's an invisibility. I think we start to create blind spots for ourselves, so we start to not celebrate our queerness or not celebrate our womanness or not celebrate our difference or our muscle building or the bits that make us us, or our prior education or all of those bits and pieces. We kind of start to silence and make invisible these different parts of us. For me, what calls me back into the middle is this intersection that, like, I have felt, I've felt dishonor and I've felt shame and I've felt pain. And I know that you have felt dishonor, shame and pain. And I know that you have felt dishonor, shame and pain. Mm. And so we can meet in that. Like, we all have a body.
Yeah.
And so we all have that experience. And likewise, we've all experienced joy, happiness and wholeness. And so if we meet at that intersection, like if I call myself back into that intersection, then that calls me back into the middle, and so it makes me a bit more real again.
Yeah.
And I can call that shit out. So like if I'm like partway through a conversation with someone and I stop for a second and go, oh, this is because I'm gay. And they're like, yeah, you're not like, are you a real minister? And I'm like, oh yeah, I made the same promises as the straight white man before me and that one there and that one there, same promises, like the laying of hands and all of that other stuff, and we sat in the same ordination. In fact, I probably had a few more witnesses at my ordination just saying, like, all of that stuff. Not that we count that, but, like, sitting in that space, the promises that I made at my ordination was so damn hard because the church has really fucked it up so many times, and I was promising myself to that church, which was trauma, which was pain, which was extraditing and exposing people and taking them out and all of that stuff. So I was making all these promises to this body, because I knew in that same body was joy, happiness, strength, vitality, realness, wholeness,
peace.
Mm. Yeah, and so we say yes at our ordination to hold all of that crap, and we say yes at that. We say yes to that promise every time we go up and take communion, every time we come back to church for whatever reason, every time we take part in the song that is community. And so that is the best and the worst.
And we promise it forever.
Yeah.
It's scarier than the promises that I made to Rob.
Yeah.
Because I can really divorce him.
Yeah.
You know, I could divorce him. If he became a dick, I could just get out of that.
Yeah.
You know, but I feel that the ordination vows are so... humongous.
Yeah.
And with such mega eternal consequences.
Yeah.
That to honor those is a very big deal.
Yeah. And I think about that for every member of the church who gets up and takes communion, for example. At the very beginning of the Great Prayer, we say three lines, but one of them, it is good and right to give thanks.
Yeah.
Full stop. Like, how hard is that to say when you've, like, either been hurt by the church or you're going through hurt and pain yourself
having
a crap week.
Somebody's treated you really appallingly in the name of Jesus.
Yeah. Is it good and right to give thanks to that God? Like, and so you really have to realign that promise every single time you get up to make that promise to be changed by the bread or to be changed by the juice or wine or port or whatever it is that you have. Every member of the church has a part to play in that. And so we're all called into the ministry every single time we come into church and we partake in the prayer. That's a big promise that we make. And so for me, I think the intersection of both the joy and the pain sit in the middle. And actually, that's probably the best bit.
Yeah.
Because that's where I know you and you know me.
Yeah.
And we can feel each other non-sexually. We can feel each other joyfully.
I did touch your quads, though, when you walked into the room today.
Thank you, yeah.
But previously medical exercise specialist, Jonty, so I have permission.
Yeah, sure.
I did ask permission before I had a feel.
Exactly.
But to feel the tone in your your quads and your the whole... And your gastroc, it's like you're off the charts, brother.
Thank you. It's good fun.
It's such good fun. Can I ask you, there's more to James, the ordained minister, who happens to be gay.
Yeah.
Tell me about your life inside the gym.
Yeah.
Because you are preparing. I think you might be one of the only ministers that's going to do a...
Like a physique bodybuilding competition.
Bodybuilding competition in October. And I have watched your journey.
Yeah.
And watched you transform your body while you were transforming yourself and forming yourself.
Yeah.
You formed your external, internal self in a whole physical way that is also extraordinary.
Yeah.
Can you share a little bit about that? Because it's super
100%,
cool.
Yeah.
It's a very different Rev story.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
So I think we enter into ministry and we're introduced to cake, biscuits, grief and death. So you're like, bury someone, or eat a piece of cake.
And Nescafe.
That's right. Oh, Lord, have
Lordy,
mercy.
Lordy.
Yeah. And so everything's
that
like...
That should be a mortal sin, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That stuff.
Oh, my gosh. It's like, feed the body graciously with cake and sugar and GMO and cornstarch. So, like, there's not a lot of healthy pockets in the church, I might say. Mm. Like, we have donuts in abundance. And so for me, I slipped into that space where I was putting on weight on a very rapid pace, and I was working 60 plus hours a week in ministry, and I was starting to eat the grief that was losing my prior life, like having the vitality and freedom to do what I wanted to do in my spare time, and I was living in a fishbowl, all of that stuff. And so I started to pack on weight, and I was pretty unhappy, and I think working with the church, you start to, and well, anyone in an unhealthy space start to see their body from the outside. And so I'd started to more and more separate my psyche from my body. So I was watching my body from the outside expand, and I was watching my experiences from the outside, and I wasn't really connected to who I was. And it took a friend to like bump into me and kick me and just say, what the hell are you doing? Like,
pull your finger out, brother.
Yeah. So it was 138 kilos.
Shit.
Yeah, at one... So I sit at 187 centimetres and I was about 138 kilos. And I think I entered into college at like 90, so I've never been a skinny boy.
No.
And I was unhealthy. Like, I just felt unhealthy. I was pre-diabetic. I had issues with blood pressure. I had, like, all of these different things that I'd had from my doctor and all of that. And so there was no real conversation that I was having with myself about health. So it took this person to reach out and kick me and just say, what are you doing?
And for our listeners, you're not 55.
No.
You're a young man.
Yeah, so I'm just turning 35 in later this year. So they reached out to me and said, come and join me. Like, they were running a gym in Western Sydney, and it was near where I was. And so I went out and I started doing Muay Thai and functional training. And I fell in love with Muay Thai, actually. So originally the one-on-one training with Muay Thai, I said, oh, I'll do it when I get more fit. And the guy clipped me over the ear and said, just get in the ring.
Yeah.
Like, get over yourself. And it was about confidence, right? So Muay Thai ended up being a place of transformation for me, because it was like this meditation where I had to be in my body. I had to watch what was going on. Otherwise, I'd literally get hit in the head.
Yeah.
And so it really, like, just forced me to be central. And so I started to get into this rhythm with Muay Thai and functional training, and I lost a lot of weight very quickly. So I started to watch what I was eating, and I started to, like, really adapt and shift to that.
And you became a PT.
Yeah.
You often did your PT training.
Yeah, so that same coach had a major health issue and ended up helping with their gym, and so part of the insurance was to get my PT set 4, so 3 and 4. So I was doing group classes, training, some one-to-one training, and I still do some one-to-one programming and training for fun. I don't get paid for it, but it's good to see other people's transformation. And then eventually I started moving into weightlifting. And weightlifting, you have to be in your body and present, because otherwise you tear things and you get injuries and all this different stuff. So you have to be in your body, but you also have to push your body to the extreme. So this morning, pushing a 400-kilo leg press at, four repeats, you kind of like, have I reached the edge of myself? And you're like, not yet. And it's this weird, expanding, joyful experience where I'm, for an hour and a half to 2 hours a day, 100% practicing in-body experience, so that, like, when I look at you and when I look outside at other people, I'm not looking, I'm not worried about what I look like, and I'm not worried, and I know that's a place of privilege. I'm not worried about how fat or skinny I am. I'm not worried about the facial expression I'm pulling. I'm not worried about all of these different things. I can actually sit and look at you because I've experienced my own body already today.
Amazing.
And it creates this space for ministry that I didn't know existed.
Yeah. And you're super healthy.
Yeah.
Super well. When I look at you and your before and after shots, you're just like, it's like an ad for Jenny Craig, mate.
Yeah. Rev Aaron Ministries.
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, PT, extraordinaire. Yeah, no, it's good. It's incredible.
It's a real credit to you, James. Not everybody can do that. Weight loss journeys and health and fitness journeys, as I know intimately, because I've had years of that line of business myself, as I've talked about before, it's a really hard yakka.
Yeah.
And it's a real credit to you, mate. And
yeah.
It's wonderful watching you flourish physically, emotionally, and spiritually.
Thank you.
Because you are flourishing in a way that is just God so good.
Let me just add a little chapter. It's not particularly bad. I'll say two things, one really good thing and one really bad thing. Something really bad we do as a church, and probably we do as a community, is we separate exercise and physiology and healthy eating and so on and so forth, and we say that's a privilege. Like, and so it feels like a luxury to be able to go to the gym for an hour or an hour and a half. And I know that I do a lot of gym. I don't watch a lot of TV, though, just for any congregation that I might work for in the future. But we treat it as a luxury and say, people have questioned me in this and said,
I'm sure.
Are you working enough? Are you doing this enough? Or are you just concentrating on gym? You have to go back and say, yeah, I still worked 40 hours this week or 44 hours this week.
And do you ever, I want to say something like this.
Yeah.
How are you going concentrating on your porn?
Oh, wow.
That's what I'd come back with and say.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because we don't get to see that.
No.
You don't get to see that at night when they're doing that themselves or at daytime behind their laptop.
Yeah.
But they actually get to see the transformation of your body.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think for us as a community, when we talk about health and well-being and we talk about healthy eating and we talk about how what we do with our bodies and what we can and can't do with our bodies, we need to move it from the luxury space into the real space. So bringing that conversation to the floor is so important.
It's essential.
Yeah.
It's just a part of being a healthy operating human. And I would have thought that the church wants us to be healthy, flourishing, complete humans.
Yeah.
Not just theologians.
That's right.
That sit behind our big books of doctrine.
Yeah. And the voice that starts that conversation is shame. Like, it's usually someone else feeling ashamed that they've not moved to their body or they've not eaten the right things.
Always.
All of that stuff.
Always,
and so
James.
It's a whole big projection. And the second really good thing...
Because it's confronting.
Yeah. Oh,
it's
my
confronting.
Gosh.
People see you and it can be confronting, particularly if you don't exercise and you're not in that space.
That's right.
And you look at how you've transformed your body, which is just totally a total flip.
Mm.
And they go, damn, he did that. That's possible.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't sit back and use it as an excuse that I'm in menopause or I don't have enough time.
Yeah, because I don't have enough time.
Yeah.
But we made time.
We have to carve it out.
Exactly. Put it in the diary. And the really good thing is the support, actually. So, like, I have an incredible trainer, coach, and I had an incredible nutritionist, and I've had incredible friends that I've been able to touch base with. You've been one of them who I've been able to bounce different things off and plans off.
And support.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I have to say Body by Luca. But so my coach has been incredible all the way through. And Abe, if he ever listens
good
to this.
Good call out.
Yeah, they've been incredible. So the Functional Dojo in Western Sydney, like, from the get-go, they've been supportive, and they still, each of those people, I don't pay them a lot of money. Like, at the beginning, I paid them a lot of money, but now I don't need to because I'm fairly well-trained in myself. They've been incredible. Like, they still check in. They still do the work. Like, good PTs and good physios and good people are really hard to come by.
They are, and ones that you trust.
Yeah.
And let's put their links onto the bottom of our show notes.
Yeah. I'll send it through.
Yeah.
They've been incredible. They still check in. I still go and work out once in a while out in Western Sydney with that team. And
it's great.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, what an awesome conversation.
I have one last question.
Yeah,
you kind of already touched on it a little bit.
Yeah.
But with all... Like, obviously, there's good stuff as well.
Yeah.
But with all the shitty stuff that comes with being queer in the church,
mm.
what... kept you?
Yeah.
When there's so many reasons and excuses to be like, nah, fuck this, I'm out.
Yeah.
After all the awful things that people say and do to queer people in the church, what kept you? Like, why are you still here?
So the easy answer for me to reach for is to say, like, there's still work to do, but I'm not Jesus, right? So God does the breathing, I just speak the life. There's that little bit. Where I know that I was introduced through church, through God, Christ and Spirit in different people and different ways and community and so on. But stupidly, I love it. Like, you know, God, she has this crazy sense of humour that she would call this idiot into ministry.
I just love how, like, you call God she. I just love it. I just love
I can hear the typing. Just God's not a she.
Yeah. Well, I was like, I've been playing with they, them, because of the Trinity and because, like, the gender non-specific. They keep calling me back to this crazy church. So even when it hurts, like, there's moments where I look around the church and I realise the people that, not just the people, the place that's held me is this weird body where we can have real conversations and real interactions and so on and so forth. I find myself being the church, not just in the church, but in so many different spaces in my life. So in the gym and in with friends and going on holidays and all this different stuff, I find that this God still calls me to be the church, and not in a way that's like, oh, it keeps following me everywhere. Like, in this way that's like, wow, celebrate this moment and be present to it. Because at its core, the church is what? Manna from heaven. Meeting people at wells is meeting not every need, but meeting the core need of who we are as people, and that's connection and vitality and life. Everything else is a bonus, or shit. But like, everything else is pretty much a bonus. So the singing and all of that other stuff, you know, we could go without. But actually, at the core of who we are is giving thanks. Being present to each other, and being the most human person in the room. That's what calls me back to being church every single time. And I'm sure next week it'll be a different thing. Like, and the week after that it'll be different again. But at its core, this God chuckling away somewhere, watching me go, there he is again.
The ability I've watched you breathe the spirit into dry bones. I've watched you do that in many different contexts, and that's a gift.
Yeah.
And God's equipped you with a plethora of beautiful gifts, James, and I just want to encourage you to keep being you, your whole Jamesness.
Thank you.
We love you.
Yeah. I love you deeply. Like, I think our spirits are quite similar in the sense that we're really open and we're really present to each other, and that calls out to each other.
Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
It's how we roll, babe.
It's deep.
Oh, what a great conversation.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So good. Should we do gratitude?
Yeah.
To wrap it up?
Yeah.
So we do a thing at the end of each episode called gratitude, where one of us shares something that we have gratitude for amongst the grid of life. So I was wondering, maybe you want to share, James, something that you're grateful for.
I'm so grateful for professionals who go above and beyond, who are so present to their clients or to the people that they're with or to their visitors and so on and so forth. You know, we always have that interaction with someone behind the checkout and we walk away and we're like, oh, that was really crap. I'm so grateful for those people who are present and for those who are present back and available to meet each other. I particularly talk about my trainers and physios and all of that other stuff. Each of them I've found, and they've fallen into my sphere of people because they've been open and willing to be present and to be real. And I'm so thankful for them. Like, they've given parts of their creative selves to me that I can flourish. And what an incredible... Like, I'm so thankful for that.
Mm.
Yeah. People who go above and beyond and are just present and
yeah,
real.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Mm. That's a big thing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I'm grateful totally. For that stuff too.
Yeah.
It's just wonderful, isn't it?
Yeah, so good. Like, I remember there used to be, when I would used to go to uni at UTS, so I'd have to walk through the tunnel at Central. And at the end of the tunnel was my coffee shop that I'd get coffee at every day. And it got to the point where I didn't have to line up anymore. I'd make eye contact with, his name was John, and we just had that ongoing relationship where, you know, he was under no obligation to be nice to me other than I paid him to make me coffee, but he'd, hey, how are you? What class you got this morning? Coffee won't be a second. And it just, like, it brightens your day. Like, it just makes the
people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes such a difference. Yeah.
It's the $4.50 in a lifetime of, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
so good.
It.
Yeah. So good. Yeah. Well, that just about does it, I think. Anything else you wanted to share while you're here?
No, that's
stuff
massive.
You got going on.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been so grateful for you coming on.
That's cool.
Gold.
Yeah.
Gold. How's the song go?
I don't know.
You are the thing. You are gold.
I'll see if I can overlay the music.
Could you cut to that song? Cut me out and cut to that song. So
no, like, yeah, that'll be fun. Fun transitions.
Maybe we'll next series, we'll add in a musical sing-along section at the end of each episode.
Oh, please.
Yeah.
After the rush has gone, I hope you find a little more time. Remember, we were partners in crime.
I'm Ness.
And I'm John T.
And I'm James.
And this was Filthy Hope. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed that episode as much as we did. We'll be back next week as we continue into the home stretch of our series Love, Sex and Jesus. You can find us on socials and you can help us out by leaving a 5-star review, liking or commenting, or even just sharing the episode with a friend. We have some really exciting things coming up later in the year too. We'll let you know all the juicy details as soon as we're allowed to, but what we can tell you right now is that Filthy Hope is expanding and we can't wait to share that journey with you. Another massive thanks to James for coming on the podcast this week. And we look forward to seeing you again next week. Until then, take Jesus seriously and don't be a dick.